When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the 24th episode of Awards Chatter, the Hollywood Reporter's Awards podcast. I'm the host, Scott Feinberg, and on this episode, I am tremendously honored to be joined by a living legend of comedy, the great Lily Tomlin. But before we get to that, let's recap what's going on in the overall awards race. I'm currently up at the Palm Springs International Film Festival, where a lot of talent has cycled through in recent days, from Will Smith and Charlie Kaufman to all nine of the filmmakers whose films have been shortlisted for the Best Foreign Language Film Oscar, with whom I just moderated a panel, video of which will be airing on THR very soon. I arrived here this afternoon from New York, which has been a hotbed of awards insanity over the last few days, with the New York Film Critics Circle Awards, the National Board of Review Awards, and a lot of other stuff scheduled around then. But things are heading back shortly to Los Angeles, where Friday will bring the AFI Awards luncheon, Saturday the Los Angeles Film Critics Association Awards, and Sunday the Golden Globe Awards. Why is everybody rushing to get things done before this weekend, though? Because voting for the Oscar nominations, which began on December 30th, closes on Friday, January 8th. So people are going all out, leaving no Oscar voter uncourted. One person, though, who's been more measured than most about all of this hullabaloo has been Lily Tomlin, who is generating quite a bit of buzz herself at the moment for her performance in Paul Weitz's $600,000 indie dramedy Grandma, which was shot in just 16 days, premiered at Sundance last January, and went on to strong reviews in box office when Sony Classics released it in August. Most of the positive attention centered around Tomlin, who's now 76 and hadn't played a lead role on the big screen since 1988's Big Business, but who returned in a big way as a lesbian woman embittered after the death of her longtime partner, who has to set aside her own problems in order to try to help her granddaughter pay for an abortion. It sounds a little nutty, which is probably why Tomlin, a chameleon who has specialized in nutty characters in every medium over the last 50 years, handled it so perfectly. She started in TV before making films with the likes of Robert Altman, and now has returned to the smaller but increasingly competitive screen on Netflix's Grace and Frankie, which has just been renewed for a third season. But for a few more days, at least, her focus is on Grandma, for which she received a Best Actress Gotham Award nom and is up for Best Actress in a Comedy at both the Golden Globes and Critics' Choice Awards, which will take place in a matter of days. We should note that she's also nominated at the Golden Globe Awards for Best Actress in a TV Comedy for Grace and Frankie. She's a living history of comedy, still going strong, and it was a great treat for me to get to pick her brain recently in Los Angeles, where we sat down, and I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did.
Well, thank you very much for doing this, and
happy to be here.
great having you. And between Grace and Frankie and Grandma, you've obviously made a lot of people laugh this year. And so, first question I had is, when did you first realize that you were funny, or that you could be funny, or just that there was this thing in you that makes people laugh?
Well, golly, I don't really know. I mean, maybe I just expected people to be sort of funny because my parents were Southern. Mm-hmm. They came to Detroit so my dad could work. And my whole family was Southern, and they were all kind of individual and quirky, and people would make comedic references to them. Like, you know, they talk about how cheap somebody was. And their characters always made me laugh. I mean, that's what really gets me is character, some essence, because it's like speaks to humanity so vividly, so strongly. Not lines so much as their behavior.
well, it sounds from what I've read that you grew up in an apartment building that was peopled
filled,
with a lot of characters.
With people, yeah. Right. Especially in those days. It seems to me like there are fewer and fewer characters in the in the culture.
Right. So
people
how would
more
you
conforming?
How did you would just kind of roam the building, or
yeah, I would. I would go from apartment to apartment and hang out. I couldn't even be shamed away. You know, people would say, you know, I like to hang out with all different kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
There was a woman in the building who was like she was single, and I guess she'd been married. She had a child. And her boyfriend slept over, and everybody talked about it. She was my good friend. She was 10 or 15 years older, but I was the kind of kid that just hung out with people. And she just died a year or two ago, and because she was like the building hussy, you know. But her good friend at the building was a woman who's still living, and she was my good friend, too. I mean, when I was 10, they became like my, you know, they'd let me hang around.
I mean, that says something about you, that you could ingratiate yourself with all kinds of different people.
Apparently. You know, I would go to other apartments, like, and I would do whatever they did. I just was hung on. I just was mad for them. So they would tickle me and make me laugh, and I'd be so excited to just hear what they had to say and what they ate and what they thought. And the woman who died, her boyfriend was a communist. Everybody, there was all different politics
right,
in the building, apolitical.
Right.
Mrs. Rupert was a woman who was a botanist who kind of stayed to herself, you know. She had two sons that I swore were in the CIA. it was a rich, rich building, at least. Neighborhood was pretty hot, too.
So I guess there's probably an element of performance in that where you're adapting to the circumstances, but when did performance as a career consideration first emerged? I can only go on what I've read, and it sounds like there was a turning point when you were at Wayne State University and you were a pre-med student.
That's right.
Pre-med?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I never would have made it. But, you know, I had a romantic idea about what people should do, and I thought I should be a doctor and help people. And I took ballet and tap as a child at the Department of Parks and Recreation, and I did all kinds of stuff like that, put on shows on the back porch and sold tickets. Mm-hmm. And tried to cast other kids in it, and they would walk away or not show up or anyway. So yes, it was in college, and I got into a show, and it was The Mad Woman of Chaillot at the big theater at the school, and I went over there on a challenge from the girl that I was in a microbiology course with.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very imperious. She was a good friend too. And she could switch between like Snow White's stepmother and Susie Sorority. And I was talking, and so I was in my lab, and I was sort of addicted to xylene. Have you ever heard of
it? No, what's xylene?
Xylene is an oil immersion slide solvent that you inspect some item under in an oil immersion.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have to clean the slide. So we had a little tiny lab bottle, thick glass, and it would just take a few little tiny fragments of an ounce. And I used to sprinkle it on my books and sit there during a lecture inhaling it. And so I had access to a lot of xylene, and I was mad for it.
Right.
And then this particular day, I'm throwing my compass point into the laptop table, wood, you know, chipping up wood.
Right.
And she said to me, she just turned around and said, "I just abhor mindless vandalism."
And she's how old, probably?
She's not a very imperious, like
19,
an old actress.
Though, probably,
yeah,
right?
She was 19.
Yeah.
And she'd been voted prettiest girl in high school.
Okay.
So she was very confident. Except she would be confident up to a certain point, and then she would be like Susie Sorority.
Right.
Real wimpy. Like, oh, no, he wasn't.
So she says, "Come over to the show?"
No, she did say, she said, "I'm going to read for the Mad Woman of Chaillot. You should come along. There are a lot of small parts."
Oh, my gosh. Oh.
So that sort of incensed me to go. And then I got there, and I didn't know what to do, even though I'd put on all those shows. But I didn't know how to audition. So I left my name, and they sure enough did need a lot of small parts. And they called me and asked me if I'd do a walk-on. So I said, oh, yeah, I will. I thought that would be fun. So I was like the person in the cafe in the first act. And then in the second act, I got to be one of the capitalist women who was banished to the netherworld of the madwoman's basement.
And this idea of acting immediately had some kind of appeal to you? Or?
Well, I'd done all those shows on my back porch. I performed all the time, but I didn't think of it as performing. And I had led the other two madwomen wives down the circular staircase into the cellar with an improv.
You were improvising on
the show. Yeah, and the kids, just all the theater majors, they would run out all during rehearsal period to see what I was going to do, because I would do it differently every time. Right. And so I said, gee, this is really great. I love doing this. I feel so at home on the stage. And so then I got into a variety show that they were doing. I mean, they asked me to come and be in it because they heard so much about me in this play. And I, of course, again, they gave me all the best parts, like Miss Kitty in a Gunsmoke sketch and things like that. And it was just sophomoric.
And meanwhile, there's not been any formal study of acting at that point, right? Or has there been even since?
No.
Not really.
Well, I've had a couple of acting teachers. Yeah. But I never went over that well in class. I had to learn on my... I had to figure out a technique. It was hard because you don't have... You're confused about what people do. It probably would have been better if I'd had some kind of training. But I...
Or maybe not. Maybe they would have robbed you of the ability to do improv and
things. Yeah, maybe. Like... Oh, not that I'm a great improvisational actor, but I can do a certain amount of it.
Right.
I can do it if it's based on life.
How important is it to you from then through now when you're playing a character to be able to relate to that character? Because I think in Grandma, which we'll obviously focus on more shortly, but it's from what I've read, again, this was a character that you could relate to as much as any in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, and I'd created a lot of characters of my own prior to that. In fact, that's what put me on the map, made me famous from Laugh-In.
So let's talk about that, because that was the next thing I wanted to bring up. That was a pretty almost overnight change of life for you with that. How did it come about, and how did you handle this sudden
thing?
Well,
when I mean, I went on another show first, Music Scene, and that got canceled mid-season. So I had the offer to go on Laugh-In prior, and I decided to go with Music Scene because I thought it was hipper.
I'm not familiar with Music Scene, but that...
Yeah, Music Scene was a tie-in with Billboard, and we had David Steinberg was the head kid, and four or five others of us, and we formed a troupe of comedians or whatever we're supposed to be, and we would have to dramatize or introduce the same songs almost every week, you know, because they stay on the charts for a long time. And we but we'd have a concert with like Jimi Hendrix or Janis Joplin. We were like totally really way hip.
Yeah.
I chose that.
Right, right, right.
You know, and so then, so the offer was still open to come to Laugh-In, and I went and met with George Schlatter, and I just, we just hit it off. I just loved him. He totally got me in some way.
And prior to that, you had been doing stand-up?
Yes, I'd started doing a little stand-up, you know.
Because a lot of this...
I had invented characters.
Right, and so the ones that you're... So still to this day, people associate with you from the Laugh-In days were actually predated Laugh-In, right?
Yeah. Well, Ernestine and Edith, Edith Ann definitely predated Laugh-In.
Yeah.
Others came shortly after that when I started doing my own specials. And there was, Lupe, the world's oldest living beauty expert. and the Rubber Freak.
Right.
I did those on Merv Griffin.
What about, where's Tommy Valore?
Oh, Tommy Valore came from a special.
And Bobby Janine?
Bobby Janine came from a special.
Okay, so these...
But they were all people that I just adored, you know. That I mean, the Bobby Janine I did adore because I used to go to a place in Glendale. It was like a supper club, and this woman, Cheryl Corby, was a cocktail organist. And her husband, Tony, I think his name was, he would, like, play the snare drum, like, you know, and they do... And, she didn't even sing, but, and she was very ladylike and proper, and I wanted to do Bobby Janine, you know, like she'd been a church organist.
Right.
That's my story for her. And so then she played in places where people drank and stuff, but And she was always very ladylike and cordial and
right.
had cute little sayings like marriage is operation cooperation. And anyway, Bobby Jean, I did that on, because when I got to do, after I was on Laugh-In,
yeah.
and I didn't go into Laugh-In until the third year. Mm-hmm. So then Ernestine was just like an overnight sensation.
Well, that's what. So I've got to ask you the two that I would get murdered if I didn't ask you about were Ernestine and Edith Ann, because would you say those two had the biggest following in a sense?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because Laugh-In, it was a huge, huge show.
Yeah.
I don't even think Fox existed, did it? There was just the three networks, right. and people watched. I mean, millions of people watched Laugh-In every Monday night, and people would tell me later. Oh, Lily Laugh-In meant so much to our family. I mean, it was the only show that we could sit down with our mother and dad and share together.
Right.
And it just really was like an addiction. And when you came on as Ernestine, we just cracked. Even Ella Fitzgerald told me
really?
That at Carson one night.
Wow.
She was in the hallway. Our dressing rooms were across the hall from each other. And she said to her cousin or aunt or somebody who was in the waiting for her, she says, get out here, get out here. Here's Ernestine. She said, we rolled off the couch. You know, when Ernestine would come on, we would just fall about.
And where did Ernestine and Edith Ann come from? What was the origin story there?
A young guy named Jim Rusk, who's died now, mm-hmm. I used to pay him to pitch with him. And he wrote musical comedy, little mm-hmm. ditty things. Like, really, he's very clever.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to get him on Laugh-In on the writing staff, and they wouldn't hire him. And I swear I think it was because he was... He was just kind of squirrely, mm-hmm. you know, and they just didn't get him. They were just all kind of macho guys.
Yeah.
I don't even think we had a female writer
really?
On the staff. I don't recall one. But anyway, and he wrote on my specials, but I could not get him on Laugh-In. I should talk to George about that to this day. Anyway, so we were going to do a because the phone company had just been... had just been suspicions of...
Oh, monopolization.
The monopoly thing was a big issue.
Right.
But they also were supposed to have aided, you know, like covertly with tapping wires
stuff. Sure,
So that was a rich subject. So we started to try to invent a telephone operator. And we were going to make her like a tough Bronx. I didn't expect to go anyplace. I was just in New York and wanted to be a New York actor.
Right.
So that's what we did. So, and then as we worked on her, and I would work on her at home by myself, and the more I worked on her, Jim provided a lot of the material. Like she'd say, oh, isn't it cute? And like she'd say, according to your files, your present bank balance and your stocks and so on, they'd say, oh, isn't it cute? No, sir. Later, I did another joke on it. I can't remember what she'd say at that time, but I'd say, apparently you haven't read the Patriot Act. But so then it was something appropriate to that time.
Sure.
But so Ernestine just, and as I did her, she got tighter and tighter. Her face was all screwed up, and she started to snort. It was all serendipitous.
That's amazing. And how about Edith Ann?
Edith Ann was, I just wanted to do a child.
Right.
And I had started, I had done Ernestine and Edith in my act before I went to Laugh-In.
Right.
And Edith was just me doing a kid. I wanted to do a little girl. And the woman who was friends with the woman who was the building hussy.
Right.
She had a little girl. Her middle child was a little tiny young girl, and we lived in the apartment house. This was years and years before, and she had a very deep voice. It wasn't like that.
Right,
that's
right.
just how it comes out
right,
of me.
Right, right.
But she had a very deep voice,
right.
and I used to just be enamored of her, you know, listening to her talk. So when I got the chance to do a kid, I tried to pitch my voice in a deep way. And that catchphrase, and that's the truth, that came from, I was on the road with Dan and Dick working on Edith Ann. I went out on the road with them the first season that I was on Laugh-In, and I had Ernestine. Ernestine was a big, and I had other characters too. See, I had a 50s teenager who would be at a school dance, and that was kind of poignant and everything. I had developed, you know, several little characters.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I was working on Edith Ann. I would just improv her with the audience.
That's
I would ask them to ask me questions. And so I was at a hotel at Del Webb's chain of hotels where we were staying at one place. And I'm down in the lobby one day, and a little girl is there. She's about 4 years old. And she had a speech. I learned later what this was. She had a speech impediment where her tongue was too big for her mouth at that point. She didn't have control of her tongue totally.
Oh, my gosh.
And they outgrow it.
Right.
But, and she was so adorable. And she's sitting there, and she's saying, she had like a stuffed snake doll, like a big happy snake. And she said, she didn't have a deep voice, but she said, "I have to give my snake a bath."
With the tongue.
And she'd blow a raspberry.
That's great. That's
and then great. I'm listening to her, and every time she said a TH, she blew a raspberry. Well, that's it.
That's great. So now, the first film that you did, I believe, was Nashville, which is kind of unbelievable because...
Unbelievable. Altman.
Yeah, I got to ask, how did it come about? And then the fact that you got such good feedback, including an Oscar nomination, how did you process that?
Well, I was very resistant to playing the game or being part of the system. So I remember my pet Kingsley must have been PMK. She was like preeminent publicist in those days. She's retired now.
Sure.
She became a great friend. And so she wanted me to go on a bunch of stuff, you know, to promote the movie and promote me. And I said, no, I'm not going. I'm not going to go on any. I didn't go on anything. I didn't win either, but...
Well, but of that massive ensemble, which is obviously what he was so associated with, I think it was you and, was it Ronnie Blakely?
Oh, Ronnie Blakely got nominated.
You were the two nominees, I think, right?
Was yeah.
I don't know if anybody else, but...
No, I think...
That's a testament to... I mean, for a first movie, you were just kind of... felt at home. Was it Altman? What brought that out in you?
Well, my family's Southern, so I know the Southern culture.
Right, right.
Ned Beatty was my husband.
Mm-hmm.
I know that whole thing, good old boys and everything they do, and white patent leather loafers and a white patent leather belt. And,
right.
I had my kids were deaf.
Right.
I took sign language for 3 months to try to learn to speak it, but I couldn't.
Right.
I memorized it.
Yeah.
And I was there a long time. We were there 2 months, and we only worked about 2 weeks each, every actor.
Yeah.
And so I spent a lot of time with the kids, with the boy particularly, Jimmy Calvert. And his mom was very outgoing and everything. I knew how their culture would feel if she sang with a black choir. They would say something like they would excuse her because her children were deaf.
Right.
Her children were disenfranchised in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Positive experience overall. Though you enjoyed it.
It was glorious to be in Nashville and be in an Altman movie for the first time. And
yeah.
We had Altman and I had the same agent. In fact, I just was talking to somebody today, and he said his favorite movie was Cuckoo's Nest.
Uh-huh.
And I brought up the fact that Louise Fletcher, who won for Nurse Ratched, I sort of was thought about for that role. Michael Douglas and all that stuff. And she was supposed to be my character
Are
in
you
Nashville.
Serious? Wow!
And she and her husband. Had been involved and produced. She was a player in Thieves Like Us.
Yeah, yeah.
And her husband was a producer. And Altman and her husband had a fight, and she pulled away from Nashville.
Well, ironically, she can do sign language because weren't
her parents deaf? Yeah,
yeah.
And that's where that idea came from.
Interesting. Well,
but I didn't learn that until the night she won the Oscar.
Yeah.
And she signed to her parents. And I thought, how interesting. And we wrote each other. And then I asked around, and I sort of found out from somebody that she was supposed to have Linnea's role.
Wow. Amazing. And
it is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And do you think the thing that made Nashville possible, that put you on Altman's radar, was the fact that you shared the agent and he probably had seen your work? Or
was it, we shared the agent, and yeah. Sam Cohn was very used to...
Packaging,
his clients in movies, or, and he loved Altman. He was mad for Altman. And so he, I'm sure he promoted me to Altman for that.
Sure. Well, before we get quite down fully to business on Grandma, I just want to mention, if I can, a couple of the other great film roles, and just the first thought or two that back to you, if we can. And the first one was produced, but not directed by Altman, The Late Show. So 2 years later, The Late Show. What do you remember most about that?
Well, I worked with Art Carney and Bill Macy. Bill Macy, who was not the...
with the H.
Yeah, not with the H, right. Bill Macy, who was Maude's husband, for one thing. And what I remember most about it was I fought with the crew a lot.
Really?
Yeah, because... And Altman produced it, so we would go at his office every night and watch dailies, mm-hmm. or if we were able to go. If we were night shooting, we didn't go. So, and I loved Art Carney was a mm-hmm. dear guy. And so it was all about the lighting, because my hair was really black in those days. Mm-hmm. And my face was long. And Art Carney has white hair and a florid skin.
Right.
And we were it was a low budget, like a couple of million or something. And they were bouncing light off the ceiling in this little house in East L.A.
Right.
where Art had a rooming. He was like in a rooming house. And the rooming lady was Ruth. I can't think of her last name. She was married to John Chamberlain, the director, and Jamie Chamberlain is mm-hmm. their son.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she was very dear. I can't think of her last name.
We'll look that up.
Okay, so I fought with the crew and everything, and it was just a classic story of that era. It was 75 or 6.
Right.
And I'd say, so we didn't see dailies for 4 or 5 days because we were at night shooting. And when I saw them, I was sort of stricken because my hair didn't have any highlights. My hair was really dark, flat. My face looked long and was not good. And I don't think comedy plays well if you don't look well.
Interesting.
Anyway, so we worked it all out, but it was a bit tough.
I know one of the ones that you are still asked about probably as much as any, and that unfortunately is still very relevant, is 9 to 5.
Oh yeah, well that was great because that was my first. I knew Jane and I knew Dolly. And Jane was preparing the movie, and she came and saw me at the Amundsen, in my show, appearing nightly, my mm-hmm. first one-woman show. And Dolly, and I was good friends with her manager, Sandy Gallen, at the time. And that was just a blessing.
Could you ever have imagined that 35 years later
we'd be sitting here in the same crap? No, we stayed friends all these years, but no.
Well, and not only that you'd be working, that you'd be working, but also that the issue is not a lot better than the issue of wage inequality and all of that.
Right. Yeah. No, it's inched up in small increments, but no, it's still in great imbalance.
Right.
but Jane and I couldn't have known either that we would have this kind of an offer at this point in our lives.
Right. That's so cool. And has Dolly ever petitioned to join you guys on the show?
No, Jane and I have been talking about, they were trying to get the show settled, you know, so that the image of 9 to 5 doesn't intrude too much. And so we have an idea we're going to pitch to Marta.
Oh, that's great. That
about
great.
Including Dolly in our third season.
All of me.
Oh, yes. That's one of my favorite movies because I just loved it because it was so lyrical and funny. And Steve and Dick Libertini, they improv the whole Beck and Bull. And that's what everybody seems to remember.
The most, yeah.
But, no, I loved it. I loved it. But I've always been kind of a cheeky, you know, I was always very protective of the whole movie.
Right, right.
I wanted it to be right.
You have done two movies with David O. Russell.
Yes.
Flirting with Disaster and I Heart Huckabees. And in the years since then, I mean, that really kind of started what has become a very blossomed career for him. And you guys, he's a colorful guy. You guys had an interesting time. What do you remember most when you look back on those?
Well, I'm still quite crazy about David. He's a great filmmaker. In some ways, he kind of made me think of Altman, but they're really diametrically opposed as types. But there was something about David that was, I don't know, it was like somehow like Altman, and I can't...
Maybe big casts of great actors. They both
maybe,
have, yeah,
maybe
you know, if you
so.
Think of big ensembles.
Yeah. But David, the first movie we did, the first one was...
Flirting with Disaster.
Flirting with Disaster. And that was a funny script. I laughed so hard every time I read it. I'd read the same thing. And he allowed for improv, too. And so, like at the dinner table with Alan Alda, we did a lot of improv that got into the movie. And I love making Huckabees, too. It was just so off the wall. And every movie he makes is different.
Yeah, totally.
Amazing. So it was just, it was pretty fun. And we had a big viral video out of it.
Well, but you've been very nice, I think, about always saying that that was the exception to the rule. That was not like the regular situation.
No, no.
Right?
But he's a wild guy. I mean, he's, you know, he's going to express himself. Maybe he's like really backed off a little bit, but I kind of like him in his bad boy suit, sort of.
Now, as the years have gone by, have you found Hollywood to be, you know, we talked about this on the panel the other day, just that it's not a town that, at least in the studios, is known for being very welcoming or even just providing interesting opportunities for women after 40 or whatever age. And as you've gone...
And not even so interesting before
even
40.
Even maybe before. So as you've traversed that period...
They're going to follow the culture. I mean, they should lead it. They could certainly be one of the leaders. And maybe in some fashion there have been people. But no, I mean, they reflect the culture, in my opinion. And so, men dominate the world in power and money, and they have no, you know, to varying degrees, they have no use for women at all, or very, you know, perfunctory service positions to someone who's very much more liberally minded and has a different point of view, but. By no means do we have an equal society. So,
as an artist, does it get frustrating that it seems like if you, at a certain point, if you want to remain creative and have that outlet, it's either the theater, occasionally an indie movie, or more so than ever now, television, right? I mean,
yeah.
Is that the reason that Grace and Frankie was appealing to you? You're not getting those kinds of parts in movies necessarily?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it would have been appealing to me. I've never been... I don't consider myself a movie star. I consider myself a good actor who was in select projects, and they were all projects I chose to be in.
Right.
So, yes, that was major to my own sensibility. Mm-hmm. And plus, I'm not considered a leading lady. I'm not, you know.
Well, you had been, and then with films,
comedic,
it's like 27.
In comedic roles,
right. So the fact
But a leading lady, now they have lots of great parts for women.
Sure. But the stat that kind of blew my mind, because I didn't realize this, was that it's been... So the last time prior to Grandma that you had been the central character or a co-central character in a movie was Big Business with Bette Midler, right? So that's 27 years. And it just seems like that in that time, as you say, you've always enjoyed and been great in ensembles. But does a part of you bristle at that? Why, you know, it doesn't seem fair to me.
No, I'd rather... No, it does... It doesn't seem like unfair to me because, as I say, I'm not. I'm just not someone who fills those roles easily. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could. I mean, in my heart, I know I could.
Sure.
But I'm not because I'm just not the type that some studio person might envision. So I don't feel they've been unfair to me personally, okay. But I feel they're unfair to women in the culture.
Yeah.
And I don't like to see, I don't like to see women taking inferior roles.
Right, right. And there's, it's still,
it's
you know,
it's a dirty tough. Business and somebody's got to do it.
So when did you first hear about Grandma and what was your immediate response? Because I know you'd worked with
I worked with Paul Weitz, yes. On admission just shortly before that.
Yeah.
And after we'd gotten admission released and promoted and all that business, Paul called me and said he wanted to have coffee. He wanted to tell me about an idea he had. And we went and talked for a minute, and I liked him. I like him anyway, mm-hmm. So much. And I don't know if I told that story about the washcloths on... about my mother and I went to see Imitation of Life, and his mother, Susan Conner,
right.
Is in the movie.
Right, right, right.
This was in the mid-late 50s,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
With 59.
The movie was 59. Right. And Lana Turner and Sandra Dee and Susan Conner were in that movie, and Susan plays a girl of a mixed race, and Juanita Hill was her
yes.
mother. And my mom was so excited to see the movie, and she said, oh, I know this is just going to be a real, you know, tearjerker. And she opened her purse and she had 3 washcloths inside. So I lived my whole life to meet Susan Conner and then to meet her son, and he's a director. And I got to tell, I said to him, we were talking at my office, and I said, what did your parents do? And he said his father was a designer. Yeah. What is he?
I think he was actually an agent. Paul Conner, I think, was a big
agent.
Yeah,
that's right, because and then he said, my mother was an actress. I don't know if you know her, Susan Conner. Well, I was bouncing all over the room, you know.
Have you had a chance to meet?
I have.
That's
great. She's lovely. She's beautiful. She's fabulous.
I'm sorry she's retired. I'm sure she could still be doing it.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. And what was it, do you think, that appealed to you beyond the fact that it was another chance to work with Paul? That, I mean, it seems like you're a very loud and proud feminist in your own life. Here's a movie that really offered you that chance. Plus, as you noted, there's quite a few similarities in other ways between you and Elle, the character.
It was the content. And I love Paul's sensibility. I loved About a Boy, and I knew he had a way of just having the character be around something. I trusted him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you're doing a movie that has virtually no budget. What was it again? It was
under 600.
600, though. You've got 19 days to do it. It feels like it might have been a bit of a grind. Was it enjoyable still? And
totally enjoyable. Yeah, totally.
And
I drove my old. I had an old 55 Dodge,
right.
Royal Lancer.
Right.
And one day we'd been working together on some of the, you know, just the ideas of the movie and stuff. I mean, cleaning, you know, talking about how would Elle do and so on. And he said, I said, where are you going? And he said, I'm going to go look at an old car. I said, well, I've got an old car.
And that was that. And your clothes, some of your own, I think you wear your own.
Yeah, the costumer, not to, you know, dismiss the costumer at all. But and she brought me good stuff, but I said, you know, I probably had it on. I said, I should probably just wear this. Because it feels so right.
Right.
But I cannot even mention Grandma without, you know, the other actors are so good. And that's a testament to Paul, too, because they just all came on board in a minute. Marcia Gay Harden, Sam Elliott, John Cho, Elizabeth Pena, who's died since.
Yeah.
And my granddaughter, Julia Garner, she's just exquisite. She's so wonderful, so real, so...
Well, one question I had was that, you know, Paul was saying in an interview that you would go off, I think on the last day, certainly right after shooting Wrapped, and you're already off to do your one-woman show, you know, and you're doing that quite a bit, 30, 40 shows, they were saying, like a year, and maybe even during the making of the film, you were working on other things as well. Why do you work so hard? You don't have to prove anything to anybody, so what is it that
motivates
you?
Well, I mean, it's, well, I need the money, partly. I mean, I have to work.
Mm-hmm.
If I could pull way, way back and probably get away without working, But at that time, the Road was my biggest provider of income.
These one woman shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you enjoy those?
Yes,
it's
I do.
Do you find that? No, I mean.
But I forgot to mention Judy Greer, my girlfriend in the movie. She's so good.
Yes. You mentioned girlfriend in the movie, and both Grace and Frankie and Grandma feature prominently gay characters, which is not something that I think you say prior to your own coming out. That was not. I think you played one before Tea with Mussolini, right?
Tea with Mussolini, but we had a gay character in The Search.
Right.
A gay couple.
What's your take on how much has changed?
Well, that's astonishing.
Well, please, yeah, I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, it's just astonishing. I mean, it's just, it's like around the time that the gay movement started totally being, really being effective. And I mean, we wound up with an African-American in the White House, too.
Yeah.
It was just the timing of stuff and the appearance of change. You could not have predicted it, no. Either one.
No, it's exciting time to be alive. And with Grandma, was the character always going to be a gay woman who had this long relationship with another woman, or was
right.
was it?
No,
tailored?
It was. She had a long relationship, and that person had died just a year or two before, and
right.
She was broke because she'd paid off the medical bills, and
right.
Of course, I've been in a relationship for 44 years with Jane Wagner,
yes.
My partner, and.
And worked with her as well.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember because, there are certain moments and last thing on this topic, but where, people remember Ellen coming out or they remember Neil Patrick. There were different things. Ian McKellen. In your case, as I recall, was it somebody kind of took it upon themselves to imply or to out you in a way? Or
I always talked about Jane, and I for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And but no, it's like when you're around so long, people either people sort of assume that maybe you're out or something, mm-hmm. or you're not producing eggs anymore. I don't know what it is that motivates him. But it was
right.
This was a guy like in Us magazine,
right.
He just wrote about it. I don't even know how he wrote about it. I forget the phrase.
But it's not. Was it something that you found at when it happened? It's annoying or it's upsetting or you didn't mind?
No, it's so funny because the show, The View.
Yeah, The View. Yeah.
I'd just been on The View like two or three days before that.
Yeah.
Barbara said to me, she said, "You're not married, Lily. Is there a reason? I mean, you just haven't met the right guy." But she. And I said, "Now, Barbara, we both know that's not the reason."
Oh my God.
I couldn't believe that
she was just baiting you.
I think she may have forgotten. I was
oh
gay.
My goodness.
I don't know what she thought. It was kind of comical, but.
But within the community of actors and people in the business, they knew.
It was, oh my God! Yeah.
Yeah.
Since I started doing specials.
Yeah, it's just
even George Stevens at the Kennedy Center when I did the Vegas special. Where they're trying to impress on me Mickey Green is supposed to be like a comic in Vegas. He's an actor, and he said he gives me a joke, and the joke is, I could have any gal, or in your case, guy I pleased. Unfortunately, I didn't please any. And when I get on my do my act,
right.
I get the joke all
right,
mixed
right.
up. You know?
Oh my gosh!
And George Stevens wrote to me something about. Something about guys and a gal and something like that. And that was years before.
That's funny. Well, the last two things I just want to ask you is when you look at the world of sketch comedy today and how many females have sort of followed in your footsteps and are, whether it's the Tina Fey's and the Amy Poehler's or now Amy Schumer is sort of the thing of the moment, what do you make of them and of the phenomenon that, one of the things I read preparing for this was a New York Times article, I think from 1970, marveling that there could be female comics like you and Joan Rivers and Madeline Kahn and all these, that you didn't have to mess up your hair and act, you could be feminine
attractive.
And attractive and still be funny. Now, from then, just 45 years later, what do you make of how much things have changed or maybe not?
Well, it's kind of part of the other change. It's still not in the same equal terms of male performance. I mean,
right.
on Saturday Night Live, look at back to at the original cast in the 70s, right, and all the guys, Belushi and Aykroyd and who are, and Steve goes on the show like a regular, and I can't remember the other guys, but, and Lorraine and Gilda, they never got the chances that those guys did to make movies. They had failures.
Yeah.
And they'd have one in the can, one on the stage, and one in the theater. You know,
it's true.
Never failed.
Yeah.
And Gilda got to do, like, in some kind of supporting way. I don't think she was, like, led the movie.
Right, right.
And Madeline never got the opportunity. She was in a couple of Mel's movies. Or she was in Paper Moon, too, right, and she was wonderful. I mean, Madeline and Gilda... Madeline more than Gilda, because I knew Madeline because I was at the upstairs and the downstairs with her. She was divine. I just adored Madeline, and I thought Gilda was hilarious and wonderful and sweet and vulnerable.
Right.
You know.
And of this current crop, who stands out to you?
Well, I don't watch the show that much. I'm sorry to say, but
not necessarily specific to SNL, but just any of the
The comedians. Yeah. Oh, well, I think Amy is talented.
Which Amy?
Amy Schumer. And I think Polarin. And I think Polarin and Tina are... I did the movie with Tina.
Sure.
I love Maya Rudolph. She was wonderfully talented. But I did a movie with her, too. I did the Altman movie.
Right.
What is it called?
Which one was that?
It's the one... It's
Prairie Home?
Prairie Home.
Okay. Well, the last question is this. You seem like a pretty happy person outside of work, and yet I look at other comedians or comics, and time and again you just hear that these very sad things, whether it's Robin Williams or so many others, and I just wonder what has been your secret to avoiding some of the pitfalls that seem to come with, you know, just with this kind of a life?
I don't know. I think maybe I've never hit the level that Robin or any of those people did. I had enough admiration and respect for what I did or was doing all the time that I didn't take myself too seriously. I mean, I'm temperamental and need to be run out of town very, very often.
But you're here and still going strong.
Yeah, because I have a... I kind of have maybe you'd have to ask people. I was going to say I think I have a kind of a more lighthearted but sad view on life. I mean, I see life as sad and hilarious, tragic and comic, just rampant. I can't turn away from it. I see it so clearly. I see, I mean, and people who are disenfranchised. I mean, I was watching with Jane last night. I got home late from the set, but she was watching a kind of documentary that was made on the Indian, the American Native American culture, and about Indians who come to L.A. from the reservation in the 50s.
Wow!
And they were living in the slummy part of town, and you know, a lot of just disenfranchised. And the women are very different from the men at that time.
Right.
They're just, they reflect the culture.
Right.
The men had a lot of freedom. They went out and drank and caroused and just filled up their lives with buddies and language and alcohol and card playing and stuff. And the women had to stay home with the children in grim little places.
So you feel
strong. They all had religion.
Right. Right.
Or seemed like they had the depths of religion. I see so many cultural groups that do, and I just... and then I think about, we're just like poor humans. Poor, pitiful humans.
And all you can do is laugh.
And all you can do is laugh.
Well, thank you very much for doing this and for many laughs.
All right, thank you a lot.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.